Blog Talk Radio.
Earning an executive MBA at Georgetown isn't the path of least resistance, but it does come with the greatest reward. Benefit from our strong alumni network, renowned faculty, DC location, and global residencies. Get started at choosegeorgetown.com/EMBA.
What becomes of a broken heart? Just thought I'd let you ponder over that for just a moment. And while you're pondering, let me welcome you to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. My name is Daryl Clark, and as I like to state, you are in the right place at the right time. Just a little bit about that bumper tune, What Becomes of a Broken Heart. For a few reasons, I decided I wanted to play that one. First of all, our sympathies go out to the family of the singer of that tune. And for those of you who don't know, that was the late Jimmy Ruffin. Jimmy passed on just this past Monday at the age of 78. And you know, as I think about songs, you know, tunes like that, you know, you can't help but just think, wow, they don't make them like that anymore. You know, what becomes of the brokenhearted? Just to give you a few lines from the tune. As I walk in this land of broken dreams, and no, I'm not going to sing to you. I have visions of many things, but happiness is just an illusion filled with sadness and confusion. What becomes of the brokenhearted? Who have loved that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. Maybe. But then he goes on toward the end of the tune and he says, now what becomes of the brokenhearted who have loved that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. I'll be searching everywhere just to find someone to care. I'll be looking every day. I know I'm gonna find a way. Nothing's gonna stop me now. I'll find a way somehow. What becomes of a broken heart who have love that's now departed? I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. Baby, oh yeah. What you gonna say about lyrics like that? Come on, come on. Give up some love for the late Jimmy Ruffin. Again, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. And I mentioned I specifically wanted to play that tune in respect and in tribute to Mr. Jimmy Ruffin, but also how apropos with so much going on in this mad, crazy, hellish world that we survive in. We survive in each and every day. That's what I love about that song. Each and every day, we've got to find a way. Oh, baby. Oh, baby. Each and every day, we've got to find a way. So that's what our charge is. I could go on and on and spend the entire hour talking about the madness and the deprivation and the erosion of our society and its morals and those in so-called leadership positions who have truly failed us. Children dying on the streets. Women being abused and raped. We all know about the Bill Cosby scenario. If you don't, Google Bill Cosby. It's all over. Who am I? I don't know what happened. But it is a shame what is happening. Everything is relative. And frankly, I'm glad that the women have stepped forward in what they are claiming, allegedly. And that's one of the millions of atrocities. Because that would be an atrocity if that's the case. And I'm not pointing any fingers, because none of us within an earshot of my voice, including myself, are perfect. And we've probably all done some, no, not probably, let me back that up. We've all done some things we're not all that proud of. And none of us are short of being forgiven. We've got to put it in perspective. You talk about, for example, what I was just referring to with how women are being abused and raped and we think about the running back. I won't even mention his name. I won't glorify that. I don't want to even get into that media hype for the Baltimore Ravens and you know what he did to his fiancée and dragging her out of the elevator. Okay, so she may have spit on him. Okay, dude, what you going to do, beat her up to a pulp? You know, you're 300 pounds. She's about 98 pounds. You know, you're a thug, dude. Get over it. You need some help. You shouldn't be playing professional football. Professional? See, that's the word. And that's why, in my opinion, which I have a right to speak, it's my program, get over it. You shouldn't be allowed to play. Go get some help. Get some therapy. Show that you're ready in 3 years or 2 years. Right now, you're not ready to be considered a professional. And that's just my opinion. And I'm not saying that he has to be perfect or more realistic without fault. Because as I said, all of us have fought. All of us have fought. But live up to what you did, dude. The issue with him and the other football player, I won't mention his name either, who plays for Minnesota Vikings. These are just small examples. These aren't even the tip of the iceberg. This is just the pinpoint of the iceberg. You know how much of that goes on in professional homes every single day? Some wife somewhere is being battered right now as I'm speaking. And for those of you who had a mother who you loved like me, then you know what I'm talking about when you say that's an atrocity. Because you see, I know myself, there are folks out there that do not appreciate a mother. They never were loved by one, or they didn't have one, or they had one who was abusive or who didn't know how to be a mother. But I don't believe in celebrating Mother's Day just on Mother's Day. So I take real issue the way I was raised. If you have a problem as a man, such that you've got to raise your hand, it's time to walk away. That I draw the line. Honey, love you. We've been together 2 years or 5 years or 30 years. But the day I got to beat you up is the day I have to leave. That's it. And I live by that. By the grace of God, I'll continue to live by that. And I'll be able to teach each and every male individual that I have any influence on that same mantra. That's different from protecting yourself. I mean, literally, and not soft-shoeing, where you literally have to protect yourself for your life. That's different. You have to protect yourself. There are women out here, don't misunderstand me, that will bring it and bring it hard and strong. You got to defend yourself if you want to maintain your life. But other than that, come on here. You know, there are women in India now and in China who are born into prostitution. Born. Literally. They're children. Born. The women teach their children, their little girls, how to become prostitutes. It's a way of life. So, yeah, this world we live in definitely got problems. So with that said, leaning into our program, those of us who are able to listen in on this program with a cell phone or a landline or a computer, we have so much to be thankful for, and we have so much to do, because we can sympathize and feel bad about and talk about how terrible it is, but until you lift the finger, as the song says, you haven't done nothing. Stevie Wonder. So today we're going to talk about being thankful, and as we are in the wake of the holidays and Thanksgiving, and myself, in the last several years, I've come to take it very, very, very seriously. So we're going to have a program tonight, and we're going to do just that. We are truly going to give thanks. So if you'd like to dial in and talk about your perspective of that, and how you're grateful for whatever. You don't have to get into any details. But sometimes it's just good to acknowledge. one of my favorite verses, because you all know I'm a Christian, not to take away from my Muslim and my Jewish and my Hindu, Buddhist brothers and sisters out there, but I happen to believe in Jesus. And my Bible says, I will extol thee, Lord, for thou hast lifted me up and not let my foes overcome me. I'm giving up. I'm giving up the honor and the glory, and I'm saying thanks. Thank you, Lord. Believe me, I've had some challenging times in the last year, especially last few years, and you just don't hear me complaining about it, because I am so thankful, so grateful for what I do have. So today, we have a individual that actually goes back many years, in fact. One of my earlier programs, at least he's been with me, 5 years at least, from time to time. He comes back and joins us. And for those on the mailing list, as I like to say, you know who I'm referring to. He's a good man. And he is one that he walks the talk. And he's traveled the world in order to do that. So he will be joining us very, very shortly. And it's been quite a while since he's been on. He's had his challenges, in fact, personally. But he's never given up. He's fought the fight, and he's going to be coming back tonight to share some good news. Because that's what we're about. We're about the good news. A lot going on in the media. We know the Republicans are up in arms over our President Obama's immigration stand. Frankly, I'm just glad to see him, our president, standing against the opposition, because I've been a bit concerned about that. And I still stand on what I've said since he took office, even prior to him taking office, so I'm not hedging on what I have to say. And that is, I would like to see him, especially as a African descendant, to take more of a stand for what's happening for African Americans here in this country. I'm extremely disappointed in where he has stood with that. And I give him credit for some of the things that he's done, but relative to what needs to be done. And I know I got very, what I consider somewhat close associates, and maybe one or two of my friends, because there's a definite line between my associates and my friends. And there's a difference, a huge difference in the number of the two of them. Very few friends. But a significant number of associates. And an associate, you're right at the brink of me having a significant amount of trust. A friend I trust. And even a couple of my friends are Obama lovers. They love the man. Almost to the point where you could do no wrong. Now, that's silly. That's why I said almost to that point. Stand their perspective, which is, look, I mean, he's up against it. There's only so much he can do. We all know how it goes. For those of you out there who are the Obama supporters, and I am a supporter, don't misunderstand me. I said I'm disappointed in some of his work, but I do support the man. But he is taking a stand on this immigration issue, and the Republicans supposedly are going to make a big boo-ha about the whole thing tonight, which they're so famous for doing. These are the same people that shut down the government, remember. You know, I don't consider myself left-wing or right-wing, because from my perspective, politically, it's all one bird. You know, left-wing, right-wing, it all comes down to the same bird. And there are some, I won't take it that extreme, that on that note would flip the bird on the whole damn thing. Excuse the French to my children out there. You know what I mean by flip the bird. I'm not that cynical. Because I know we could be somewhere. We could be in Bosnia or in Sudan. There's a number of places that I would not care to be right now. So I wouldn't want to be anywhere else than here, where at least I have a possible opportunity to make a difference, at least speak my voice. So with that said, I would hope that all of you who are listening will take a position on this. You know, just take a position. Listen to some of the issues and take a position and stand on it. You know, should the immigrants who are here, and I won't even throw a number out there. It could be 100 million people. We really don't know. The government knows. Because anytime you could land an object the size of a washing machine on an asteroid 3 million miles away, asteroid is about 2 miles wide, that's equivalent to us being in the United States and landing a flea on a grain of sand in Australia. So now, let's get it real here. So folks, please, don't be naive about what's happening here in your country. This is one of the most advanced nations in the world. So all this foreign technology that we have, totally unnecessary. Trust me, it's unnecessary. I worked in telecom. I've talked with folks, one of the largest telecommunications companies in the world, I'm very proud to say. My own company, AT&T, and I met some folks in those 25 years who were behind the curtain. Bell Labs, ATT Labs, were involved in some of the governmental proprietary technologies. So I know what this country is capable of. And yes, your lines are tapped, by the way, but not to the point where somebody's listening to you all the time. So don't be paranoid. When I say tapped, they have capability of listening to us right now, and probably somebody is. So just be conscious and take the position of somebody is listening. It's like I tell my loved ones and friends and associates, there's somebody always listening, and there's somebody always watching. So get over it. Take your stand. Be a man, be a woman. Be a young lady, be a young man. So with that said, understand what the issues are to some degree and take a stand on it, folks. That's the point. This whole thing that's happening in Ferguson, take a stand on it. We heard Dick Gregory speak on this about 2 months ago. I think it's been about 2 months almost. You know, and his point was, take a look at the video. Take a look at the date on it. It's not the same guy. It's not the same day even that they said that it happened. So there's information out there that's available to us. So all I'm saying is there's a lot of nasty things going on in this world, and we have so much to be thankful for, so much. And that's why I opened up with that tune by Jimmy Ruffin, What Becomes of the Brokenhearted? What Becomes of the Brokenhearted? And that's why I read some of those lyrics. As I walk this land of broken dreams, I have visions of many things, but happiness is just an illusion filled with sadness and confusion. But there are things that we can do, because he goes on to say, I know I've got to find some kind of peace of mind. I'll be searching everywhere just to find someone to care. I'll be looking every day. I know I'm going to find a way. Nothing's going to stop me now. I'll find a way somehow. And it's so true. Never stop. This is one of my best friends going all the way back to when we were knee-knocking little snuffy, snotty-nosed kids back in Cleveland, and we talked from time to time, would say, we never give up. And that's how we've been able to survive. And we will continue. So with that said, thank you for listening in to another edition of Progressive News Weekly. We're going to have a special extended program tonight until 8. And with that, we're going to have, as I mentioned, Mr. Larry Fleming is in the building. He hasn't been with us for a while, and I love it when I have an individual such as Larry, because it's not just a guest and I'm doing an interview, which is going to produce wonderful information for all of the listeners. He's a colleague and a friend, so I get to have some fun while I'm doing my benevolent work here, which is what I do. And Larry's a good person. And we're going to talk a little bit about this world and some of the things going on in it and why we need to be thankful, because we are all going through things and we have so much to be grateful for regardless of what we're going through. Because remember this, whatever it is that you may be going through, someone's going through something much worse. And then with Larry being an organic farmer, for those of you who've listened in over the last 5 years or so, we're going to have Larry share with us a few things as we go into this Thanksgiving holiday about good foods, because Larry is also, I like to call him chef extraordinaire. He's modest enough not to really try to boast that title, but he is a chef, and he has owned and operated numerous vegan restaurants actually around the world. He's also a humanitarian. He's a health and people's advocate. So we're going to have some fun tonight. And Larry's been so gracious to take some time out with everything that he's doing and going through himself to join us. So without further ado, Larry, welcome back to Progressive News Weekend. By the way, Larry, someone else said that they might try to call in that you have been on the program with. Ulla Pasternak, maybe joining us as well later on. But right now, Larry, welcome to another edition of Progressive News Weekly.
Thank you, Daryl. It's wonderful to hear your voice.
Oh, talk about wonderful to hear your voice. For those who have been listening over the years and have heard you sharing so much wonderful information with us, I know they got a treat just to hear your voice, because it's been a while, Larry. It's been a while. And
I had a real tragedy in my life in the fact that my daughter, who loved the school that we helped start in Nigeria and went with me 4 years in a row, and she took some friends there and went by herself this last time, and she was taking care of people and helping sick people, and she got sick and was super tough and didn't tell anybody that she needed help. And before they knew it, she had a serious case of malaria, and it was too late to treat it, and she passed away, and it was the biggest tragedy and loss in my life.
Oh, Larry. Wow, Larry.
And I'm so thankful, Daryl, that in this situation that, you know, so many people die in accidents and you don't know what they're doing and what's going on, but she died doing something she loved to do. And I spent a month with the people there, just got back, and their stories were so numerous of things that she was doing at night and on her own time and helping people. And there was a woman that came there with a boy that was hydrocephalic, so that his head was too big for his body. And she was so discouraged, you know, just what you were talking about, like, why is this happening to me, and why has God let this little boy suffer? And she was just, you know, in Nigeria, a child like that has very little chance of ever accomplishing anything. And there's not even a place, you know, for him to get around. And my daughter saw this woman angry at God and discouraged, and she went there every night and every morning before the light was out, and she massaged his arms and massaged his legs and got him so he could get up on his hands and knees and start to crawl. And before she died, he was walking. And his mother was really just rebuked by this, in the fact that she was giving up on her son. But here, this little girl, and my daughter's little to me, she was not quite 18, but here this girl wouldn't give up. Just went there over and over and over again, massaged, sang to him, until he could get up, and he was like holding his head with his hand and walking around. Now the little boy's body's grown and his head is there and he's running around and he keeps saying to his mother, "Where's Miriam?" But what a wonderful report to have for your life and your life work instead of some of the things that, you know, we spend our time with in this world.
Larry, let me make sure I understand here. I mean, this is very moving for you to share this. This is a very, very personal story, and of course, you didn't have to share that. But for you to share that, talk about how we opened up talking about being thankful. I didn't realize everything that you have just shared here myself, and I'm. Oh, okay, I got to catch myself here. Don't get me worked up here on my show, dude. You know how close we, you know, Larry, we even sat down and broke bread and everything, and, you know, my daughter and your daughter became close friends.
Yeah.
You're telling me that Marion went to Africa, and she took it upon herself to take on this crusade, and in the course of that, she contracted. Oh boy, she contracted.
You know, the problem was my daughter had never really been sick, and so when she got this crippling, you know, problem, she thought, "Oh, I'll drink more water, I'll work hard, and I'll, you know, this will go away." And so she was busy taking care of people up until the end.
Oh, and she didn't even realize how sick she was.
She had no idea. She'd never really been sick. She never had sickness, never been, you know, she ate the best of vegan food all her life and was strong and healthy and did not have any clue that a mosquito could take her out. So it was, you know, it was so difficult because, you know, I wasn't there with her. I, you know, just got, "I'm fine, I'm doing better, I feel good, I'm worried about this girl I brought here, she's not doing well, I'm trying to take care of her," and so, you know, it was such a tragedy that as I spent time with these people, I mean, it was report after report after report. I couldn't believe that one person could be in so many places doing so many things trying to help people. And so I look back and I can tell you I miss my daughter. I miss her so much. But I know that she had, you know, a great legacy of doing something that, you know, anybody is proud of her behavior and what she was doing. And, you know, God knows all about her life, I know that she was loaned to me for a short time, Daryl.
Mm. She was loaned to all of us, and it's something about, you know, that saying that the good seemed to pass on, and I was just thinking about that. I was talking about that with family, not even within the last month, more than a few times. And I was speaking of noted individuals, and, you know, Michael Jackson comes to mind. And I just think about different actors and actresses who seem to be good people and just passed young. and made some, you know, made some innocent mistakes. I mean, your daughter, she didn't know, as you said, that she was walking in harm's way, just innocently, and in trying to do good things. And in fact, that a child that you said that she helped turned his, was it a young boy, right?
Yeah.
Turned his life around, so she sacrificed. And that's what I see with these, I see a commonality, a thread. I've been looking at this for years now. There's this common thread. These are individuals that literally sacrificed themselves while they were here.
Yes.
So they were in a sense like saints. And that's the thread that I'm seeing. Now, I'm not saying they were perfect because who was perfect? You know, by my Jesus.
You know, that word perfect is so interesting because, you know, if you walk up to a corn stalk that you just planted the corn seed and you see it when it's 2 weeks just sprouting out of the ground, you might look at it and say, well, this isn't perfect because I don't see an ear of corn. But it's perfect stage of its development. And God, when he looks at us, he's not looking for us to compare us to somebody else. He's looking for what we do in the situation we're in. And his definition of perfect is so much different than when we look at somebody and see, oh, this fault or that fault. He's looking at the stage of development that we're in. And he's on our side. He's not looking. I mean, a guy showed me a letter he got from his daughter when she was 3 years old. And he pulls his card out and it says, Dear D-E-A-R, Dad, D-E-D. And he said, when I got that card, you think I threw it on the ground and said, you spelled my name wrong. And he said, no. He said it was the most precious card he'd ever gotten. He saved it 20-some years. Because to him, it was perfect, you know. And a three-year-old could say, Dear Dad, I love you. And it was D-E-D. So that made it special. And as God looks at us, he's not looking for us to spell Dad perfectly. He's looking for us to have a heart of love. And, you know, that's what's going to get people through all this hatred and garbage that goes on. Everything's designed to make us afraid of each other, enemies of each other, mistreat each other, to bring out the worst in everyone. But if we can truly understand God, sometimes I have to pray, Daryl. You meet somebody, and they may just seem like absolutely the hardest person to deal with, and I just have to pray and say, God, I want to know what about that person you love. And you begin to see them in a whole different way. There's something about them that is, you know, you won't see through all that rough and ferocious-looking exterior. But when you pray that prayer, God will begin to show you things about a person that you would never noticed otherwise.
So, Larry, let me come back in tribute, because I want to give some portion of this to tribute to Marion. You and I were corresponding for a little bit after the situation, and we prayed, and boy, this is tough for me. And then we lost contact for a while, and I was concerned. I was ready to just blindly come to Maine because I'm not sure how to get to your place. So it had been over a month, maybe approaching two, and then you called. Because you hadn't called any, you know, and you never not returned my call. And you said, Daryl, I got your calls and many others. I thank you. I've been out of the country. You went back.
Yes, sir.
To Africa. Well, tell me about that.
Were,
you went to Africa. Well, you know, many people say, how could you go back? That was the source of that pain. What was that driving force that made you go back?
You know, every roadblock in the world came up to try and stop me. You know, there's Ebola, and you're going to get stuck somewhere, and you'll never get back. And I said, no, I'm going. My daughter put her life into this project, and she, you know, put her gladly, cheerfully, spent herself. And I went, and the people were so shocked. They said, wow, you'd come here where your daughter died and where... And I said, of course. I said, you know, my daughter would have said to me, Dad, they need your help. I can't tell you the number of times my daughter and I pulled over beside the road at 6:30 in the evening on Thursdays to be talking to Daryl on the radio, and she'd be quietly sitting there and say, Dad, tell about this, tell about that. And so, you know, I just miss her, Daryl. I miss her, but I would never want her to feel like I would neglect that which she put her life into. And I went, and she was working in the bakery trying to help them make better products, and I just buried myself in there day and night until we could make products that they loved and that were working and they were helping their... helping people and helping their stores, and instead of they grind their own wheat, so they made whole wheat biscuits, which are more like a cracker. And instead of going into the seasoning cabinet and getting out seasonings, I would say to the little boys and girls there, I'd say, you know, do you have something that like basil or oregano? And they said, oh, leaves, and they go running out, and they come back with scent leaf and Isuzu leaf and all these different things, and just amazing that they cook with. And we made product after product after product with all the local seasonings and spices from their own farm, and it was just fun. So they have like four little outlet stores. So we made 100 packs of biscuits for each store so they would have something that would last for a couple weeks, and they could sell them to people. And so I was curious how much shelf life they would have, because you've got, you know, issues with hot weather, et cetera. So that night I called up to see if they'd sampled any or if people liked them or what they were doing. And the Nigerian guy teasing me said, they have very poor shelf life. And I said, oh, no, they went bad? And he says, yeah, he says, they went bad. They were all sold in one day. So here was my two-week supply gone, and I just said, you know, thank you, God, for helping me to do what Miriam was trying to do here and give them some industry to be able to help other young people have a way to support themselves from their farm work.
Mm. So you, in effect, went back and was able to continue that crusade. And in that sense, I would venture to say, and please correct me if I'm offbeat on this, as I know you would, that's what a friend does. I would to say that was energizing for you. That was healing for you, because you actually picked up on her energy. And I'm talking energy now. And with that said, I see Eula has joined us, so she may join in on the dialogue at some point. But of course she is very sensitive to the, you know, the energies of individuals in her studies. But I would venture to say that you really felt as though you were inbound in her energies that, of course, are still there and will forever be there. Am I off track on anything?
No, I felt privileged to be able to try and finish what she was trying to start. So it was a very nice experience. Every time I go there, for years I've been going back and forth. And you go thinking, I'm going to go do something to help people, and you come back feeling like, wow, they did so much to help me, I don't feel I did anything. So that's been the story all the time, and this was no different. You just, you know, feel like really strengthened by what they're doing.
So when you went back to the same area that your daughter was in when you went back to Africa then?
Yep, I went to the same place, stayed in the same room, under the same mosquito net, and just you know, wanted to walk through her steps.
Mm. And you said that you were able to provide them with a means of helping themselves. It's not as though we've always said we don't want to give someone a fish. Let's teach them how to fish and give them the tools to fish with. So that which you were able to come up with is something that they can on an ongoing basis use, Larry?
Yeah, and that's what they like anyway. They love to, you know, those people are not lazy. I want to tell you, they're working like crazy. They just need to have some ideas to run with.
So in terms of farming, as you said, we know they're not lazy. What do you do in terms of using, you know, your expertise in that area with regard to them, you know, growing the things to help them to sustain, or are they already somewhat well acclimated to?
Well, they're getting better and better. My friend from, he worked in a New York restaurant, but he was from France and has an organic farm in Portugal, went there ahead of me, and he was teaching them how to plant trees that are much more, you know, much more hardy and able to withstand wind and other things by digging much deeper holes and making lots of good compost for the roots. And he has been completely moved away from any kind of animal fertilizer because, you know, the disease in animals is affecting even plants. So what he does is he took clay from the river and built a big, you'd think of it as a big salad bowl, but we're talking about like 20 or 30 feet across, and then he takes all the green clippings that he cuts down and clearing a field and puts them in there and fills it with water. And in 2 or 3 days, it smells just like a barn. It rots and it makes green manure and uses that for fertilizer, and plants love it. They grow wonderfully. So the whole place, the school, is turning into a garden where you walk around and there's food growing everywhere all around you, just different things at different seasons. And they're raising rice, and they're raising cucumber. I go come back. You know, I had my daughter could counsel patients in this pidgin English they speak. And I taught my daughter, I mean, I can speak in like 40 different languages, something related to restaurants. And I taught my daughter to do that. But when I go to Nigeria, I could never understand them. And my daughter pointed out to me that I'm always thinking of what they're saying as wrong pronunciation. And so I don't try and listen to it. But she just listened to it so she could communicate with them. And she, you know, she could speak with everybody. And so this time when I went, I said, you know, I need to listen to my daughter's advice so that I can, you know, learn what I was trying to teach her. And I, for the first time, I could really do way better hearing people. And I was telling the Nigerian people, and they're laughing and laughing at me, that I was standing by this road, and this lady came up to me, and she was jumping up and down and waving her arms like there was some kind of terrible thing going on. And she was saying, "Sifa, Sifa, Sifa." And I was like, what in the world? And I'm trying to put my face really close to her, trying to hear what she's saying. And finally, literally, she took my nose and turned my head around, and behind me was a fire. And she was saying, see fire, see fire, see fire. And here I am trying to, you know, see it, learn a new word. And then when I saw it, I ran and I put the fire out. It was on the side of a building. But, you know, I just had to get over the idea that, you know, I was trying to correct and change and, you know, make words be pronounced properly. And when I started hearing and I could communicate, then I had much more influence for that anyway, instead of just, you know, thinking of it as, oh, you know, this is wrong communication, I have to change this.
That speaks volumes. It's being open and reaching out as opposed to looking at it from a foreign perspective. Because we're all, you know, we're all really one race, that human race. And
yeah,
I think that, again, that speaks volumes in terms of learning a new language, because I even talk about often that, you know, we all should be trying to learn, you know, more than one language. I was speaking about the immigration issue as an example. You know, I said, take a stand, someone. You know, Obama is going to stand out and take a stand tonight, and apparently it's in the media that the Republicans are going to make this big brouhaha about it, and it may even get, you know, they say physical, they're going to have protests, it may get into riots. I mean, they're really, you know, the media hype, of course, is pouring fuel in the blaze of that anyway for the commercial content. But I was just having some conversation about, you know, the whole immigration thing and the fact that, you know, we do have individuals here from a different land who speak a different language, and they're here in such numbers that we really need to just embrace the language. We really need to learn Spanish. And I do not believe in, and I don't want to spend too much time on this, because I see Ula has called in from Pennsylvania, and I want to give her a chance to weigh in on some of the things you've said, because I know it's very moving, and she was concerned about you as well, as I told you before. So many people have been concerned about you because they've asked, you know, you and Ula have been on the program together. I'll tell you another individual that asked me to give you a message. Do you remember Brother Franco? Missouri, yeah, he has been asking. A lot of folks have been asking. The people, as you said, there's so much love. But anyway, getting back to my point, and so I don't necessarily believe that, you know, we're in America and we speak English, and Spanish should come here and learn the language. But at the same time, there is an opportunity, and that's what I'm coming back to. The opportunity is for us to take advantage of this opportunity, which so many people, and you can look at the protests, oh, they shouldn't be over here. There's an opportunity for us to expand, because they're here, to learn another language, which we need to do anyway. But Brother Frankel says he just wanted to thank you when I spoke with him even today, and he says, you know, how's, you know, Larry? And I said, Larry's doing well. He says, tell my friend, thanks for being a big boy. He says, thank him. And he said, by God's grace, he wouldn't expect. He said, by God's grace, he wouldn't expect anything less from you. Now, what did you say about Ula?
Tell Ula Jenkuya. That may give us our word to introduce her to say thank you.
Well, she's on the line. Ula, are you there?
Yes, I am. Hello.
Hi. Say hello to Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hi, Ula. It's nice to hear your voice.
Oh, likewise. I am so grateful for your loving sharing with all of us and inspiring us with your story, with your reaction to the grief, and to be able to rise above the grief and honor your daughter and her legacy. And encourage all of us to appreciate the service that we choose and the help and the guidance that we receive from the higher realm to go out there and risk our health and wealth and help out those in need because that is what feeds our soul. That is what gives purpose to our lives.
Thank you,
Laura. Okay.
My daughter had a memorial service, and these business people that we deal with came to the memorial service, and this one guy is a stoic. He got up, and tears coming down his face. And he said, you know, he said, here's this little girl. And he said, you know, I thought during this time, I've heard all these people speak, he said, if I were to die tomorrow, he said, I can't think of one person that I know that would have something to say about me like all these people have said about her, of how helpful and how cheerful and all the people she encouraged and helped and did things for and made things for. He said, from now on, I'm never going to live the same again. And it was such a moving thought. You know, this man in business, everything he wants, to just stop and think, wow, here's somebody at 17 who passes away and had such an effect on so many lives, and he just wanted to start spending his life thinking more about other people and what they need. And that was so powerful to me. I don't think, Ula, that I'm doing all that well. I feel like a big marshmallow ready to break down with no, you know, no warning. And yet I'm not sad. I'm so thankful for the time that I had with my daughter. One of the things that's happened to me, I'm not Mr. Technology. My daughter would always help me figure out my cell phone, et cetera, et cetera. So when she was 17, on her 17th birthday, I sent her a text message, which was really a big project for me, and I told her, dear Miriam, thank you so much for 17 wonderful years. I love you. And I saved that message. You know, I didn't use my text messages enough. It even went anywhere. It was there. And one day I read it, and I thought I would save it. So I thought I pushed save, and I pushed resend. So my daughter calls me back in a little while and says, Dad, why did you send me that message again? And so I realized it was sort of a funny thing for her. So I sent it almost every month. Just sometime randomly sent it, not knowing that she was only going to live to be 17, but I was so happy that I'd had that opportunity to do that over and over again, and that her reaction to it was always really sweet, of just enjoying hearing that message again and again. And it was very special to me that had happened when I realized that she wasn't here anymore.
And that is how we all can enjoy each other's company and not wait for big moments or big gestures, but appreciate the little ones and have more fun, be more playful, to contribute to each other's pleasure and kindness and joy of being here in the physical. And I hope you still feel her love and allow her to come to you and comfort you from even the other realms where she is, because we are always service, if not here in the physical, then in the soul and spirit realm.
Wow. Her service is so well appreciated and remembered in Nigeria. It was just wonderful to be there and to walk in her footsteps and do things that she was doing. It was a wonderful blessing for me.
You know, I see Cecil has weighed in here. Cecil, are you there, Cecil?
Yes, I am.
Yeah, I see you. You just tagged me here. Got my attention. You wanted to say something?
Actually, that was quite a while back. I'm listening now. We're in another place. But anyway, that was earlier pertaining. I guess when you guys were discussing perfect perfection, all of that sort of thing. I had a comment on that, but we're in a different place now, so I'm cool. But now I'm just listening and enjoying.
Okay, just wanted to make sure. Yeah, and so as we had said at the chime in where you need, Cecil, because not often. When you say something, it's always something that's very significant. So I wanted to make sure I didn't miss you on that. I just observed it, my mistake. But I want to, on this note, this sort of as we branch into the holiday season on another note, share with the, with the listeners, because Mary, you are a true health advocate. You treat the land with the love that it's meant to be treated. And, of course, Ula has a certain love for that with the work she's done nationally and trying to see that our foods are unadulterated. And so with that, I wanted to segue into an area as we enter into the holidays to have a little bit of a discussion about holiday foods and some of the things that, traditionally we see individuals having on their and families having, on their holiday tables that we might have a little bit of a discussion about. For example, I think about things like potatoes, sweet potatoes, mashed potatoes, pumpkin. You hear about pumpkin pie. I know some of those things in your restaurants that you used to serve, Larry, and do. So talk with us about some of the, and Eula, chime in wherever, some of the foods that
I find
particularly good.
I had a real carnivore over here, and one of the things that I find is that people are much more open if you can just serve them something they love. So I made lunch for this person and had some rice and quinoa, and I had some spinach, and I had some sweet potatoes. And they took a bite of the sweet potatoes, like a mashed sweet potato, and they said, "Wow, this is so good. What is the recipe for this?" And I said, "Well, it's very complicated. You better write it all down." And I said, "Those are sweet potatoes with the peel cut up and boiled until they're tender so they can be mashed. And then I put in pineapple and I mash it like..." And what I do is I drain the water and I keep a little bit of the water so I can get the right consistency to make a nice, smooth sweet potato. So the ingredients are sweet potatoes, pineapple, and a little bit of salt to bring out the flavor. And she said, "These are the best sweet potatoes I've ever eaten." And she said, "I was expecting some big, long list of seasonings and spices and whatever." And I told her, I said, "If you're in a real pinch, you can get crushed pineapple and just mash that in. But if you can get a pineapple and let it sit long enough to get really ripe, so it's really juicy, sweet, and then smash it up in your sweet potatoes. And that's a great, simple thing to do for Thanksgiving. And almost anybody you meet will compliment that more than any sweet potato dish that they've had anywhere."
And you know what's interesting about that? There's no dairy in it, and not to try to bash dairy, but it's, you know, it's one of those things, do you have to have milk? And we won't go into a whole discussion on nutrition and that, but it's as simple as you could possibly get. There's no sugar. I didn't hear you say put in, you know, half a cup of sugar. So there's no dairy. There's no sugar. There's no butter. Okay, I didn't hear you say, you know, put in half a stick of butter. I mean, it doesn't get, and those are three culprits, you know, health-wise. That,
yeah, you've got it. No cholesterol, high fiber, delicious food. Sweet potatoes are loaded with nutrition, and pineapple's excellent. So the two together is just, you don't especially think of that as a combination. You don't see it. It's not like you look at it and you see something. You just see sweet potato.
It's so true. So very true. And, of course, I heard you say if you have to. I love that. If you have to. You can get a can of Crush. In other words, the preference, and I know Ula will appreciate this, the preference is always fresh. Is that not so, my farmer friend? The preference is always fresh because there's nothing like it, right?
Yeah,
as opposed to canned.
If we were in Nigeria, you know that it would be the pineapple right out of the field, but sometimes you're stuck here in America and, you know, sometimes you go and buy a pineapple and it's 2 weeks away from being ripe, so it's hard if you're at a friend's house and making a dish for Thanksgiving. You might have to go the second route. You can always get some nice sweet potatoes and lots of, you know, nice organic ones at Whole Foods, and it's a perfect time of year for them. But people really, really like a dish, and it's just so simple that you can't fail.
Yeah, that's so very true. And, you know, as an extra treat, just for some energy, I would say, well, I'd like you to weigh in on this one. Just as an extra treat, I would suggest to the listeners, and listeners, you know, if you want to comment on this or join in this dialogue, of course, you're always encouraged to do so. The number is 347-838-9142. And we have online two extraordinary individuals who truly walk the talk, Mr. Larry Fleming and Ms. Ula Pasternak, both health advocates in their own professional right. But I would suggest to our listeners, just consider, as Larry said, number one, fresh over canned. And I'm not trying to get in anyone's pocket, because I understand these are tough times for many, if not most. And I'm looking at my thumb on that, not pointing a finger. I'm living that myself. But maybe treat one portion of the dinner. If it's just the potatoes or the string beans, you know, the vegetables, something, treat some portion of that meal maybe on Thanksgiving, if you can, with it being organic. And there is a difference between organic and non-organic. Am I right? I'm speaking to both Ula and yourself, Larry. Both weigh in,
you
please.
Know, organic, you know, we look at organic like something special, but look at it a different way. Let's just turn time back to 1800s. What wasn't organic? You know, people were healthier, and yes, they had some common things that they had medical problems, but, you know, as far as, like, people getting sick and obese and all that, they were all eating food from their gardens. And to this day, if you travel to England, you know, we say in the front yard and the backyard, they say in the front garden and the back garden. Their yard was a garden. It grew food to help sustain the family. And people didn't go out there with chemicals and all kinds of stuff and spray all over their food. They knew how, and they knew how to take care of their food, and we've just gotten removed from it. So we say organic. Think of it as what your grandparents and your parents before them all did. Sorry, Ula.
No, it's just appreciate the growing cycle, appreciate and infusing already with love and care, and exchanging that love and care for the harvest, and living with the cycles of nature and cycles of life, we are so far removed from nature now and our food and food production and appreciation as well. So fresh, organic or biodynamic or at least conventional, avoiding genetically modified ingredients as much as possible and being truly connected to the bounty and the blessings and being grateful for them, because that is what sustains not just our body and mind and soul, but our love for this world and the exchange that we are here to learn from, like your daughter, serving this world with passion and care and love. So we are to receive the bounties from this world, and food is one of them. Most of us need to consume food to nourish the body so we can serve this world. And more we can care for the food, whether it's vegetables and fruits and herbs, or the animals, and eating that beautiful turkey that sacrificed its life for us. How was that beautiful animal treated? And was it fed properly? And was it given a good life? We are the stewards of this world, so let's be good ones. So the exchange is for good service in this world.
You said how removed people are. And I had some people from the New York Stock Exchange, really quite a responsible person, and about 35, 38 years old. And we were having a big dinner outdoors. And this person goes down to the garden, and you hear like a scream. And several of us ran down there, and we thought, you know, maybe there's a chipmunk or a snake or something. And she's like hunched down pointing into the garden. So we all gathered around quietly, you know, looking, where's the animal? Where's the, you know, reason for alarm? And we're real quiet looking and don't see anything. And she whispers, "Look. There's a tomato growing right on that plant." At first, we thought it was a big spoof, you know, like what? And for the first time in 38-some years, this very intelligent person realized that a tomato grew in a garden. So when you say how removed we are, I don't think that people really understand how far. And I told that story to a Maine farmer, and he says, every year they send busloads of children to tour his potato farm. And he goes and shows them all the different things they do and how they're raising potatoes. And he said, "Do you know that every year the teachers, not the students, come to him and say, 'You know, we've always wondered where potatoes came from.'" And what you said is so much more real than we ever could ever believe. And it's today there are so many people that are so removed that they don't have a clue about farming and about what's happening with plants and how important it is to raise them in a way that you'd want to put them in your mouth. It's amazing. And before I forget, Daryl,
yes,
potatoes and pineapple the next day, cold, are absolutely fantastic. You can serve them with salad. They're hot, taste one way, and cold tastes a total another way, but both are delicious. So sorry for going back.
Oh, no, that's a great point. That's a great point because you get a whole different experience, but yet it's just as healthy or even more, but depending on your taste, delicious. So that's great. I'm glad you shared that. That is really wonderful. Now, tying back to – go ahead, Eula.
May I also make a suggestion that then you can reinvent it to actually a sweet potato pie?
Yes, you could.
And let's take a trip around the world. Sweet potatoes are often a dessert in Oriental cultures and Japan. So let's have sweetness and blessings of the season throughout the world as we celebrate it on this continent, at least in our two countries, maybe not on the same week. But there is so much joy and pleasure to be had with every meal. And if we can connect to the sacredness and appreciation of the plants and animals sacrificing themselves so we can continue to contribute to this world,